Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to the SNC-Lavalin's Q1 2011 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session with instructions provided. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today, Thursday, May 5th, 2011, at 3:00 P.M. Eastern Time. I will now turn the conference over to Denis Jasmin, Vice President of Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us. I trust that you have received a copy of the first quarter results as well as the PowerPoint presentation to guide you through today's call. You can access both documents in the Investor Relations section of our website at snclavalin.com. During today's conference call, Pierre Duhem, President and Chief Executive Officer, will highlight the first quarter results, and Gilles Lemay, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, will review the company's financial performance in greater detail. Following their presentations, you will have an opportunity to ask questions. Before we begin, I would like to remind listeners that, as detailed on slide number three, certain statements made in this presentation may be forward-looking. Such comments represent management's best judgment and expectation as of today's date, are subject to certain risks, uncertainties, and assumptions, and cannot be guaranteed. I would now like to turn the conference over to Pierre Duhem.
Merci, Denis. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us this afternoon. As you have seen from our press release issued earlier today, our revenue backlog and cash position remain strong, and our revenues increased in all sectors. However, our net income for the first quarter 2011 was lower, mainly due to the infrastructure and environment segment, which was impacted by the Libyan event. I will begin on slide number four. First, let me remind you that this is the first period in which the company financial statement has been prepared in accordance with IFRS. As required, all 2010 comparative figures have been restated. The net income attributable to the company shareholders for the first quarter of 2011 was 73.9 million, compared to 84.1 million for the first quarter of 2010. This reflects a lower net income in excluding infrastructure concessions investment, what we call ICI, partially offset by a higher net income from ICI. The net income excluding ICI was 49.5 million, compared to 64.6 million for the first quarter 2010, reflecting lower contributions from mining and metallurgy, as well as infrastructures and environment, mainly due to the impact of the Libyan events and partially offset by better contributions from all other segments. The net income from ICI increased by 25% to 24.4 million for the first quarter of 2011, mainly due to higher dividend revenue from Highway 407. As you can see on slide number five, revenue for the first quarter of 2011 increased by 25.1% to 1.6 billion, compared to 1.3 billion for the same period in 2010. Revenue increased in all of the company's segments of activities and in all revenue categories, but particularly in package, which increased by 64.6%. The company's financial position remains strong, with cash and cash equivalents of 1.2 billion at March 31st, 2011. Our cash balance position us well to take advantage of strategic opportunities for business acquisitions and concession investment. The company's revenue backlog, which no longer include the ICI revenue backlog, increased to 9.4 billion at the end of March 2011, compared to 8.6 billion at the end of March 2010. The March 2011 amount does not include any Libyan project. Until such time as the Libyan situation is clarified, the company is maintaining its decision to exclude all of its Libyan projects from its revenue backlog as a precautionary measure. In the first quarter 2011, we were awarded four major projects, but so far, only two have been fully booked in the revenue backlog. The engineering procurement construction contract for the 166 MW Timi'i geothermal project in New Zealand, and the engineering procurement construction contract for the modernization of a copper smelter's complex in eastern Serbia. The Muskrat Falls Hydroelectric Development Project and the multi-year project hub contract with Vichy Villeten, which we announced in March 2011, have not been entirely included in the revenue backlog. These are long-term, multi-billion-dollar capital cost projects and will be added to our backlog in phases as they unfold. We expect they will ultimately increase our service backlog significantly. As you will note on slide number 6, we have numerous and very interesting opportunities in many sectors and countries. The Infrastructure and Environment Group continue to be very active. The group is looking at worldwide opportunity, especially in Asia, Canada, Europe, and the Middle East, and particularly for airport, building, hospitals, mass transit systems, and roads. As for the situation in North Africa, there has been no significant development since our last conference call. Our Libyan project has been temporarily stopped, and as soon as the situation is resolved and diplomatic link is reestablished, we will be continuing our infrastructure project in that country. Until then, we continue to monitor the situation very closely. As for Egypt and Tunisia, our project and operation are back on track. In the power sector, we continue to see an increase in activities. We are looking at many opportunities in North America and internationally. As mentioned, the group just signed an agreement to deliver engineering, procurement, and construction management services for phase one of the Lower Churchill project at the Muskrat Falls Hydroelectric Development in Newfoundland and Labrador. It also continued to see opportunities in hydroelectric, thermal, and nuclear brownfields and rebuild power projects, as well as upgrade and new transmission and distribution systems. As for the AACL file, the process is still ongoing. But as mentioned at previous conference calls, due to a non-disclosure agreement, we are not allowed to comment further. Despite recent events, we maintain that nuclear energy is a viable carbon-free alternative with significant potentials in Canada and abroad. The Chemicals and Petroleum Group continue to pursue various opportunities. We see a resumption of activities, particularly in Canada, the Middle East, and South America. We have just been selected, together with our local partner, by Saudi Aramco, to perform general engineering and project management services, what they call GES Plus, under a 5-year reimbursable contract. Under the contract, we and our partners will perform front-end engineering and detail engineering, as well as project management services to support the execution of Saudi Aramco capital program. The mining and metallurgy sectors is performing very well in terms of new opportunities. The long-term forecast for commodity price is still positive, given the growth in the global economy, especially in South America and Asia. The high level of mergers and acquisitions in mining and metallurgy is also positive and usually result in optimism in the sector. As a leader in this area, we are targeting numerous opportunities in many key sectors, such as aluminum, copper, gold, iron ore, nickel, and potash. And these opportunities are all over the world, but especially in Africa, Australia, Canada, Middle East, and South America. Our operation and maintenance group continue to grow as more infrastructure concessions are being completed and entering the operation and maintenance phase. They also continue to pursue new opportunities with our engineering and construction divisions and to develop both new and traditional markets, such as the remote camp support services, mainly in Canada, but also abroad. And finally, our infrastructure concession investment group continue to pursue many opportunities, mainly in Canada and increasingly elsewhere. In conclusion, our revenue backlog and cash position remain strong, and we see many opportunities for all our products in many regions. We were awarded significant projects during the first quarter. Our total personnel increased to 24,700 people, and we see strong growth across all our sectors of expertise, despite the recent event in North Africa. Therefore, we continue to expect our 2011 net incomes to remain in line with 2010 when we exclude the gain from the disposal of certain assets and investment recognized in 2010. I will now turn the conference over to Gilles Lalamé to review our financial results. Gilles.
Thank you, Pierre. Good afternoon, everyone. Turning to page 8 of our consolidated income statement, we see our revenue, as Pierre mentioned, increase in all categories of activities to end it up at $1.6 billion, and with a significant increase in particular in the packages activity. The gross margin did not follow suit the level of growth in the revenue, and mainly because of lower gross margin to revenue ratio in the infrastructure and environment sector, and that mainly due to the Libyan event. Also, there was some additional cost on one project in mining metallurgy, which impacted the percentage of gross margin to revenue ratio as well. Our selling and general and administrative expenses went up from $130 million to $153 million, a quite significant increase in the first quarter. However, first quarter of 2010 was a low figure for SG&A. When we compare on the average over the last 12 months of 2010, the average was $145 million. So really, the impact that we're seeing right now in the first quarter is not reflective of the trend that will occur in the next three quarters for 2011. That being said, the $153 million of SG&A is reflective, however, for ongoing rate for 2011. Net financial expenses from ICI, the increase from $18 to $23 million is mainly related to AltaLink, and from other activities is mainly due to the fact lower interest expenses, mainly due to the higher yield we're getting on our cash and cash equivalent that we're investing, and as well the fact that in 2010, second part 2010, we reimbursed our 105 debenture that we had in 2010. Income tax expenses remain in percentage-wise about the same level for 2011 to 2010. So, which ended up to have a net income attributable to shareholders of $74 million, of which, as you can see on this page, on the net income from Highway 407 being at 13.8 compared to 9.2, this increase is mainly due to higher dividend received on Highway 407. As we've told investor at previous conference call, the reflection of the income that comes from Highway 407 is based on the dividend we're receiving. So as you can see, in the first quarter of 2011, we got $13.8 million. Share SNC-Lavalin, net income from other ICI was about in line, whereby there was some pluses in Astoria 1 and 2, while we had some negative or lower amount in 2011 compared to 2010 as Trendcap and also Valenair / Gaz Métropolitain we had sold in the last part of 2010. So ending up with net income excluding ICI being lower at $49 million compared to $65 million. Turning to slide number 9, going by the revenue and operating income by segment. So infrastructure and environment being higher revenues, mainly due to package activities. However, as I mentioned before, the lower operating income relates to the Libyan events for 2011. And we must say that the performance in 2010 was very strong as certain contracts add some favorable cost reforecasting in that first quarter of 2010. Chemical petroleum volume was up, and that generated an higher operating income, which was slightly impacted by higher SG&A in the chemical and petroleum, as we are trying to get some new contract in that sector in particular. Mining metallurgy, revenues were up, and as I mentioned, the operating income at $1.4 million being lower, mainly due to additional costs on a project, and for which we did not anticipate to have. And basically, this project is almost completed. We should not get again. Power segment, we see that the volume was higher and the operating as well. And we had in 2011 some favorable cost reforecast on certain other projects. Other industry, the service revenue made the difference for the increase of revenue. And as well, the gross margin to revenue service ratio was also higher, which ended up to have double operating income compared to 2010. Operation and maintenance, higher volume and therefore higher gross margin as well. And lastly, the ICI, as we've talked before, mainly Highway 407 being the reason for the increase in the operating income. Turning to page 10, being our financial position, nothing really to comment. We're reporting now under IFRS. You can see, and if you compare to GAAP, as an example, Canadian GAAP in December of 2010, you would see in our annual report of last year, we had long-term debt for non-recourse from ICI of about $3 billion. We do now have $1.5 billion. And that is the fact that, for example, Highway 407, for which we were doing proportionate consolidation under IFRS, we are on an equity basis, and even for Highway 407, as pointed out before, because we have a book value at year-end of zero, we're recording a profit based on the dividend we're receiving. Apart from that, I would say nothing to comment on our balance sheet, remaining very strong with a strong cash and cash equivalent. Turning to page 11, revenue backlog by category of activities. Our total revenue backlog stands at $9.4 billion, compared at year-end at $9.7 billion. The main difference is in the operation maintenance, which we reduce our level of backlog, and that is mainly due to normal timing of the contract, as we do have long-term contract, and as we encounter with time, every year we're consuming as we are entering, we're recording backlog on those contracts to a maximum extent of 5 years. The services and packages backlog remain at the same level. And as Pierre mentioned, we had removed, for as precautionary measure, all Libyan projects from our backlog. On page 12, the services and package revenue backlog by segment. I think there's nothing really to point to that stands out, apart from maybe in the power package segment. So we increased our packages as we've signed over the last, in the last quarter, some few large package contracts. Apart from that, the situation is about the same level as it was at year end. Turning to page 13, being a first-time adoption of IFRS, I think we entered into the impact of it last quarter, and for which we had disclosed in our annual financial statement. Again, the changes, if we take the net income for the first quarter of 2010, which was $71.9 million, we needed to add under IFRIC 12, which is the accounting of our concession, infrastructure concession investment, which qualified under IFRIC 12, add a positive impact of $5.7 million to the bottom line. As well, the International Accounting Standard 31 that deals with the accounting of joint ventures, this is related, again, the one that got impacted is Highway 407, for which we add a negative value under Canadian GAAP. We keep the value at zero at this present moment, and all the dividend which comes in impact the bottom line. So the difference between Canadian GAAP and IFRS is the difference between the dividend received compared to the net income we had recorded under Canadian GAAP. Reclassification of non-controlling interest, that relates mainly to disclosing net income, which includes the non-controlling interest. But after, you can see below, we're removing it to get to the net income attributable to the company shareholders. And lastly, other are the other impact that we do have, and which are marginal at $600,000 for the quarter. So overall, you can see also the impact for the full year that we're disclosing as well in our notes to our financial statement. So whereby you can see that under Canadian GAAP, we had $437 million of profit, and under IFRS, the net income attributable to the company shareholders was $495 million. Turning to page 14, our peer group comparison, again, on the return on equity, we are the top performer, and certainly on a price-earning ratio, we're certainly in the lower level, and that is based on the share price of 56.91 cents. So I think this concludes my part of the presentation, and we're opening the floor for questions. Hello? Hello?
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now conduct the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press the star followed by the 1 on your touchtone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your questions will be polled in order that they are received. Please ensure you lift the handset if using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the star followed by the 1. First question today comes from Sarah O'Brien with RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Congratulations on your corporate video. That was very informative at the AGM.
Thank you.
I was a little surprised in the Q1 just on the infrastructure contribution. I just wondered, can you quantify how much related to evacuation costs in Libya, and were there other costs related to Libya, like perhaps write-off of inventory or receivables included in that infrastructure EBT number?
For commercial reason, and you know that, you know, because it's a force majeure and, you know, we'd be claiming to our client, we do not wish to put any figure on that front. And but I must say that what Pierre had said with regards to the range of the cost, I think this, we are in that bracket, and the bulk of it, however, of the impact this quarter relates to work we had done in January, February, for which we're taking a very, prudent stand at this stage. So our, exposure to our accounts receivable work in progress with our Libyan contract are, we feel very comfortable with it at this stage.
Okay, so just so I'm clear, so, I mean, January, February, you had done work in Libya, so it's presumably that's been provided for, but on top of that, you had evacuation costs. Can you remind us what that range was?
Range was between $5 and $10 million.
Okay. And the AR you're comfortable with from the work previous to January, February, you're saying?
Absolutely, no problem with that.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Was there anything else in the infrastructure group? I mean, if you look outside of Libya, were project margins pretty much in line with expectation?
In line, and even certain had some bit better. But in general, I would say in line. But the main impact of it was Libya.
Okay. And just going forward from here, we should not expect to hear much about Libya other than perhaps a positive turn that you can go back to work if you're comfortable with the way things are provided for now. I would assume.
You're absolutely right, and I think we're seeing that infrastructure and environment, despite the overall, as we put into our MD&A of year end, which we're expecting lower operating income, we are certainly very positive and upbeat of the next following three quarters. As you can see, that the revenue went up, and we're foreseeing that to carry on throughout 2011. So, however, we had, as you know, very good impact from favorable cost reforecast in 2010. But that set aside, I think 2011 for infrastructure environment in the coming three quarters will be very positive.
Okay, great. And then just in the metals and mining, you commented in the MD&A it's based on sort of the one project. Was it a cost reforecast to complete, or is it a claim by a client?
Yeah, it's more the latter, a second part of it.
Okay, and is this sort of a one-off, or is there any potential for that to kind of come back?
Oh, I think it's a one-off, not to come back.
Okay. And just wondering if you could comment on Ambitovi progress, if that's going as planned. I know you commented at the AGM that the startup date would be this year sometime. Is that sort of as planned for SNC in terms of what's left to be done by SNC itself?
Yeah, for us, Sarah, the work is engineering work is done, procurement work is done. The only thing is going on right now, not the only thing, let's say, the action is in construction is to complete, you know, the refinery, which will be completed a bit later, but that doesn't prevent the rest of the plant to start. And we are right now, we are right now commissioning the utilities, air and oxygen and hydrogen and what else, the power plant is in operation. So we are getting ready to, the pipeline is also in operation. So we are getting ready, you know, to feed, you know, the first ore to the reactors. And when it would be, it's certainly not in next month, but in the coming month it's where we are.
Okay, perfect. And then just the last question on services backlog. So it sounds like you're pretty optimistic based on contracts signed in Q1 that services backlog will grow through the year, or is it based on other projects that you have in the pipeline that perhaps have not been announced or won yet?
Both.
Okay. I'm going to sneak one last one in. Competitive environment. We're hearing a little bit on the Quebec front that there's a very competitive environment for project work. Are you seeing that across Canada? Is it Quebec specific? And how do you kind of weigh that with your risk mitigation policies?
Well, are you talking here for service or for packages, Sarah?
Services to start with.
No. On the service side, we see business as usual. I mean, the environment has always been competitive, but it's not more, not less. For me, it's the same. We have our own niche where we work, and that didn't change too much. And there is still also consolidations in the Quebec market. There is still consolidations going on, and that will continue. In the rest of Canada, the market in Alberta is recovering and ready to jump, and the company are right now preparing themselves for major investment. But that has not been on full blast yet. You know, it's in preparation. So it's still in Alberta quite competitive. But in the rest of Canada, you know, like Ontario, Alberta, competitive, but nothing special there.
Okay, perfect. I'll circle back. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.
Your next question comes from Anthony Zika with Scotia Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Tony.
Gilles, you mentioned that the SG&A trend is likely to increase, and it seems to be, relative to this quarter, a bit softer than what we would have expected. What is the primary driver of the SG&A? Is it because we're still bidding more for P3 projects? And if that's the case, maybe, Pierre, you can talk about the P3 prospects. And what's SNC's batting average related to bid to wins?
First part of the question, maybe just to clarify that. We were increased in the quarter is 17% in SG&A. However, if you take the average of or the performance that we're disclosing in our financial under IFRS of $582 million for 12 months, and you take the $153 million we did in 2011 and multiply by 4, you'll see the increase will be 5%. And I think this is what we're aiming for to be about 5% increase. So we were bidding quite a bit of concession that year, and we continue to bid for some concession. So maybe, Pierre, you want to comment on bidding?
Thanks, thanks, Gilles. Like I was saying to Sarah, you know, we are in a special niche, you know, in terms of we are bidding big jobs here in Canada, but also elsewhere around the world. And of course, you know, these are very expensive. The P3 in particular are extremely expensive to bid. Bigger they are, more expensive they are, but at the same time, less competition there is. Our average, I must say, our average win is getting better and better. We, as we do more, we win more. It's a business where you learn by doing proposals. And more proposals you do, better you get to making proposals, and your average gets up. So I must say the average compared 2009 with what we are doing today in 2011, we have a better average in 2011, and that's, I think it will continue to improve. So overall, I believe the P3 market, we have on the go right now a few proposals at the same time, which is quite challenging. But you know, the prospect for us, you know, are positive for the rest of the years in term, the rest of the years and the year after, in term of P3.
Okay, and with reference to airport concessions, in the near future, do you believe that SNC could see some growth opportunities in the U.S.? And what about Latin America? There seems to be a lot of activity with airports and the whole aerospace industry developing. So what about those opportunities, Pierre?
Yeah, in Latin America to start with, you know, we did a kind of a joint ventures with Brazilian contractors, and I know there is also Chile, which is quite active also in the P3. So and in both places we are already well established. We have not done P3 in that part of the world yet, but we are well established, and we have in place, you know, the organizations to go eventually for. So it's something we are looking. And with the help, you know, by the way, with the help of our Spanish operations, which speak Spanish as well, and they are in the infrastructure as well. So I think we have all the ingredients to be quite successful in that part of the world. In the U.S., we are partnering with U.S. contractors. We are targeting some state, very, very specific, and we are getting in place, you know, local organizations to go after it. Having the, like I say, having the experience, and more you do, more you win, this is a very, very important advantage, I would say, we have on the competitions. So we are getting there. We have the balance sheets. We have the organizations. We have the expertise. We are certainly interested in that market.
And one last question. On the M&A front, you mentioned you'd be building up more expertise on the chemical petroleum side. Could you provide some color in how your progress in finding a suitable target is, and what kind of size and criteria you're looking at in terms of amounts or metrics that you're willing to pay for? Thank you.
Well, the metrics, I will hold on this one. But certainly we are doing, you know, Colombia was one for the CMP business. Suddenly there is Brazil, which is of interest to us, but we are still, you know, working on it. There is Middle East, which is interest to us, and we are working on it. There even Canada, where there is something, and we are working on it. So overall, we are working. Nothing, you know, which will be transformative in one shot, but I think surely getting where we want to be.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Welcome.
Your next question comes from Claude Prou with BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thank you. The question I have, I mean, you talk about these big projects that you landed, like the Jansen mine and the Lower Churchill Fall. You said I mean, it's not clear. I mean, you've included a little bit of it, or you didn't include it. I mean, can you give it a bit, maybe quantify maybe the impact that they have, and when are we going to see the rest?
Muskrat Falls, we included zero.
Okay.
And BHP, we included only $18 million as of March 2011. And as we've said, we will be including them into our backlog and phases as they unfold, because our clients will be providing us go-ahead, and as they are providing us go-ahead for certain phases, we'll do so. It has never been our tradition to, let's say, book and debook. So we'll carry on being our tradition to book as we are given work on phases and gradually carrying on that.
Do you think we could see significant addition in Q2?
We will go as the project goes in. The both projects need, before you know they really go for full investment, they need more studies and they need more board approval. And in Q2 that will not happen. So we'll continue to book in Q2 the service portions we are delivering right now for the study phase in both cases. I believe they will go in implementation more in 2012 than in Q2 or Q3.
Okay.
But this project are, as you know, there is important investment already done to prepare the project, but we will not book until, you know, the board give the full go ahead for the construction.
Okay. Second question is on your outlook. You said that you expect earnings to be roughly in line with last year. Are we again looking at both net consolidated and also at the engineering, or you think that you're not going to be able to match last year's engineering earnings?
Yeah, we believe we will be able to match last year engineering and construction ENC business, and likewise on the ICI, but that understanding, you need to remove the gain on sale of the business of last year.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Michael Tufholme with TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Just a follow-up question on the M&M segment. You suggested that you hope to be through the one issue that you felt you dealt with this quarter. I guess if we look back over the last few quarters, you've been sort of $1 million or thereabouts on either side of break even for a couple quarters. Now, I don't know if that all relates to the same issue or not, but would it be fair to assume that sort of as we look out over the balance of the year, we start to see that the margin in that segment start to grow more meaningfully?
I think we're having LTV backlog in the M&M business, and we've signed, like Pierre just mentioned, some large projects. So, and there is even bonus potential that we're waiting on certain projects. So we're just bullish about the operating income to come in the next three quarters on M&M. So this is one-off with our client, but I think should not base that in a go-forward basis.
Okay. What we have seen in the past quarter, in the last quarter we just finished, is different than what you have seen in 2010. 2010 was lower margins, not because of any reforecast. So here in 2011 is one-off event, and I don't see anything which could, slow down, let's say, the margin, neither the revenue on the M&M. I mean, I see a clear sky right now.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. Turning to the chemicals and petroleum segment, recognizing that you just were awarded a nice contract yesterday with Saudi Aramco that you talked about. The backlog in that segment's been falling for rough quarters now, yet it seems like we're in a fairly robust environment. So can you just talk a little bit about the opportunity pipeline there? Are we at a point where we should start to see that backlog turn up in the near term, or do we have to wait a little longer given what you see out there now?
Well, there will be, on the service side, I think we'll see an improvement on the backlog, but also on the revenue, but on the backlog as well on the service side quite quickly. On the package side, it will take a little bit more time. We have good project ongoing, but I cannot say, you know, next month, you know, you should expect, you know, a big win on the package side. But on the service side, the thing is looking promising.
Okay. And then this is just a, maybe a little bit more of a housekeeping question, but when I look at the backlog for your packages that you present in your MD&A for the year-end number, it looks to be different than the year-end packages number we saw that was reported in the fourth quarter, and it looks like all of that was in power. Is that an IFRS-related issue, or why is that number different? It looks to be about a $350 million difference.
It's a good question that you bring that up, Michael, because that will clarify the thing. And we used to account for transaction between SNC-Lavalin, T&D, and AltaLink under Canadian GAAP, whereby we were recognizing the revenue and the profit. Under IFRS, what we concluded with our external auditor is that the profit will be recognized, but the revenue will be eliminated. And you'll see some disclosure in our notes to financial statement to that effect. In that regard, due to the fact that we're not recording the revenue, so therefore we took off in our backlog the revenue backlog of SNC-Lavalin T&D with AltaLink. And the reasoning here of accounting for the profit and not the revenue mainly is that under IFRS, as we are, as service has been rendered, and as we are, let's say, having an economic benefit of building those transmission lines, let's say, and that the rate has been established and reviewed by the regulator, we are entitled to recognize the profit. However, because we're capitalizing with a company that we fully, being AltaLink, that we fully consolidate, we cannot record the revenue as such. So, contrary to Canadian GAAP, whereby we were recognizing the revenue and the profit under IFRS, we are recognizing the profit but not recognizing the revenue. And that's the reason why on the backlog you pointed out that, and I appreciate you bring that up.
Okay, thanks. That's a great explanation. Just one quick follow-on on that. So without recognizing revenue but still recognizing the profit, we would expect to see the profit margins in that segment increase relative to what we've been used to seeing there.
That's a fair statement. I think as we'll be moving along, and you have the information indirectly, because as AltaLink is IFRS or as is a filer under public information, it disclosed the transaction level between AltaLink and SNC-Lavalin T&D, but in the future we will specifically disclose that in order for you to determine the level of revenue if we would have added that revenue into it. For example, in the quarter it was $48 million that we took off in the revenue of the power segment. So what I want to say to answer clearly your answer, yes, the percentage of gross margin to revenue will be higher, but all depend also on the overall revenue of the other contracts that compared to the impact of SNC-Lavalin T&D with AltaLink.
Right. Okay. And then just one last one for me. Still with AltaLink, is there any update in terms of the closing of the purchase of the remaining interest? Is that still same timeline as before?
Yeah, same timeline as before. Everything has been filed, and it's just a matter of getting the authorization from the regulatory body.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Yuri Link with Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys.
Hello, Yuri.
Good afternoon, Yuri.
Just back to the infrastructure and environment segment, the operating income there was down versus last year about $37 million. You know, I guess $7 million of that would be the evacuation costs due to Libya. Can you just help me, you know, roughly break down what the rest of the delta is?
I think I mentioned, sorry, Yuri, for commercial reason we won't, but I think our overall comment of the lower performance is mainly due to the Libya events. So I think you could make your own estimate on that, but we won't go more specific than that comment.
Was there Libyan work in the first quarter of 2010?
Absolutely.
Okay.
We had about a revenue of $64 million in 2010.
Okay. Mining, the M&M segment, just help me explain, understand the what happened there, because most of that work is services. You do have a small packages component in the M&M backlog. Is that the portion of backlog that caused the trouble this quarter? Because if it's in services, I'm a little confused.
No, it's Pierre here. It's service only, and it's at one point of time. Sometimes you have a target price for your services, and if you exceed it, you know, you can have some penalty. So that's one of the explanations. So that's what we mean by additional costs.
Okay, but you're just selling. You're selling engineering hours in that business.
Exactly.
Okay. And last one, on the GES contract with Saudi Aramco, do you care to take a stab at how many man hours that could bring per year in terms of engineering work?
Well, it's nothing guaranteed, of course. I mean, that is a portfolio of, I don't know, 5 to 10 million man hours, which is set aside by Saudi Aramco for 5 to 6 or 7 joint ventures company. So that gives you an idea what is there. And of course, you know, the best performers would get a bigger share. It would not be split, perfectly equal. So the best performers would get a better share. And I think, you know, we will do our best to get, you know, the bigger share. So that's what I could give you as an example. I do expect at least 500,000 man hours a year, but it could go much more than that.
Okay. And what are the implications for, you know, once the feed work is done under the GES, what are the implications for, you know, future, when these projects get flipped into an EPC or EPCM?
I do expect Saudi Aramco to turn it also to EPCM. You know, they are right now bidding EPCM contract, not EPC, EPCM. And I do expect with their commitments to develop, let's say, more work in the kingdom. And, you know, for political reasons, it's a must. I mean, they don't have the choice, you know, to create, you know, new jobs, to bring their young populations at the levels where they can fulfill their career. And so I do expect, you know, the work to be fit, you know, to be fit for the capabilities of these companies. Of course, with the support, and that's why we are in GV, with the support of an international partners bringing project management, project controls, as well as engineering and construction management, the Saudi Aramco intent is really to help the creations of healthy engineering construction industries in Saudi Arabia.
Right, but I guess, are they going to open the bidding on these EPCM contracts to other contractors, I guess, is another way of asking my question.
No, again, I'm sure there would be exceptions. There would be continued to, for some packages, they would like to get it, you know, the international contractors. But at the same time, they will cut, you know, some project for their own local industry. And that's what we are targeting.
Gotcha. Okay, I'll turn it over. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Paul Letchum with CIBC. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
That's no problem.
If I can start with a question on the 407, the dividends from the 407 were up significantly this quarter over a year ago. I appreciate this is probably a question for the 407 board of directors, but given your participation in that organization, do you have any thoughts about the level of dividends from the 407 this year versus last when we look at the year as a whole?
Certainly that, you know, we declared a significant dividend after, if I would say, March 31st, that will be recorded, and this has to do with our 407 selling their ABCP paper that they had, and therefore permitting an additional dividend to the shareholders. So if you just take that additional dividend and just on a prudent basis, just take the last year payment of dividend to shareholder, you should at least get that for 2011.
So as a base case, you feel 2010 is a good representative number?
But it's the base case plus that about 100 million at the 100% level that was just declared with, and the reason for it was tied in to their disposal or their get rid of their commercial, their ABCP paper, asset-backed commercial paper.
All right, thank you. That's helpful. Pierre, you mentioned at the beginning, obviously you're under non-disclosure still with AECL, but given that the federal election is now complete, given we have a majority government, do you feel this might accelerate the process from here until we get a decision? Do you have any comments about maybe the timelines involved?
Yeah, first we are very happy to see government back to business and see a strong, you know, government there. And certainly it will help, you know, to go for the decisions. There is a strong commitment by the government to conclude, you know, the transactions. And hopefully, you know, that will be done. But we are still in discussions.
And from the reports we've seen, it seems that S&C is the only bidder in the running right now. Is that true?
Well, you know, I cannot say it because, you know, they will say, Pierre, you talk too much. But probably what you have seen is not far from truth.
Okay. Thank you. Last question. You mentioned the revenues from Libya from Q1 2010. Were there any revenues recorded in Q1 11?
No.
So zero revenues from Libya this quarter. Okay. Okay, that's great. That's it for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Hamza Mazari with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you. The first question was around current pricing in the Middle East. Maybe if you could talk about whether you're seeing the South Koreans continue to underbid you in that business, and whether there's been any change relative to a couple months ago.
Well, my view is that nothing has changed, you know, since a couple months ago. There was no real bid. We see bids on a different basis. We see, like I said, Saudi Aramco is also now bidding EPCM, not EPC. So depending, we have seen a refinery project which has been awarded on a different basis as well. So we see a better balance between EPC and EPCM services being bid out of Saudi Arabia and in other countries in the region as well. So I would say it's back to normal. Competitively, we don't see any difference, but we see more opportunities in the reimbursable side.
Okay, that's helpful. And then on the oil and gas side, you know, you've talked about being a top player in that particular end market. You know, you also said today that you're not going to do a transformational deal, but take a measured approach to acquisitions. Just curious as to your thoughts, how tough is it for you to build that business organically once you do a small acquisition, you know, in a certain region, to really get that business to scale? So curious to hear your thoughts there.
Well, the reason we are successful in doing acquisitions and convincing a company to join us is because of the synergy we bring to them. Having like we have done in Colombia, having a company, local company with strong connections with the local customers and knowledge of the local market, and then we bring the abilities to take on major package or major contract locally, which they were not able before. Just that, you know, situation just transformed that company. So there is a lot of synergy potentials by having SNC Lebanese being you know, part of the business in these countries. So organically growth, yes, that's what we are looking for when we do an acquisition. We are not doing an acquisition just to carry on the same business. We are doing an acquisition where we believe the capability of SNC Lebanese to deliver a big project with the local presence, and also sometimes also bring other expertise in other sectors, like in power generations or in the transportation, port, camp management, all these things. And when you open up a country, you open up, you know, a full possibility, a full spectrum of possibility for SNC Lebanese.
Okay, and then just last question. Is there anything differently you're doing on the services side, like maybe being more aggressive relative to the past, that gives you confidence that that's going to be a larger part of the mix? I know you touched on some of the projects in the pipeline there. Thank you.
Well, it's the thing is it's the size of the project today. These projects are getting so big, you know, in any sectors, you're talking about power sectors or oil and gas or mining or transportation, but these are getting so big that it's more and more, you know, adapted to a service contract than to a package contract. Package contract, too big, too few bidders, non-competitive. So that's why I'm more bullish. When we go more in the cycles, we see more service. It's a traditional. When we are at the beginning of a cycle, we see more package, but as the cycles mature, you will see more service.
Okay, so just a function of the market there, nothing you're doing differently. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Your last question comes from Jamil Murji with Raymond James. Please go ahead. That participant has just disconnected. There are no further questions at this time.
Thank you, everyone, for participating to this conference call. Hope you join us for next quarter's conference call. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the conference call for today. Thank you for participating. Please disconnect your lines.